you're thinking incorrectly, you're never going to get any traction. And that's what I felt like when I read his book. We ran the numbers and we kill like double on the highway that we kill in hunting season. And that was a real eye-opener for me. Like, wow, between the spot and the stock is where a lot of us fall apart. And I still experience this sometimes as those big bucks go in the cover. And now what do I do? That's what charged me up, man. Is I wanted to write, you know, I want all those books I just told you about, dude. That's what lit me up. This is Robbie Denning. You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Put down your latte and pull on your boots.
I would rest at peace for eternity if my legacy was that I made a positive influence on the non-hunting public about what hunters are and what hunting is.
I finally got my buck on our last real day of hunting.
So a pro-hunting organization is voting against hunting. And that says anti-hunting to me.
There was a year straight where I was averaging up to 200 death threats a day.
I hugged it. Like, I just wanted to hug a bear.
It's proven that the average steak in a grocery store touches 50 to 100 hands and machines. And we're putting that into our body.
Hey, y'all. Cable Smith, host of the Lone Star Outdoors Show here.
This is Adam Weatherby.
I'm Corey Jacobson with Elk 101.
This is Christy Titus.
Hey, folks. This is John Bear.
You're listening to The Wild Initiative.
Hey, y'all, welcome to another episode of The Wild Initiative, brought to you as part of the Waypoint Podcast Network.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
All right, y'all, on today's podcast, I am excited to have Robbie Denning. For those of y'all that don't know him, well, what's wrong with you, for one? But Robbie is master mule deer hunter. He is co-founder of Rock Slide, and Robbie, correct me if I'm wrong, you have a book out and now as well, right?
I do, yes. Thanks for the intro. Yeah, I released Hunting Big Mule Deer back in 2015, and I actually have the follow-up, Hunting Big Mule Deer, the stories coming out, late May? So in about a month. It should be mid to late June.
Okay, that's right. I wasn't sure if the Hunting Big Mule Deer book was the one that was coming out or had already come out. So that's good to know. I definitely need to pick up a copy. I've heard good things about the first book. Can't wait to check out the second one.
Oh yeah, I should have sent you one before we did the podcast. Just remind me when we get done. I'll fire you a copy up there.
Oh, fantastic! I probably spend too much time reading and not enough time hunting. I'm a studier, and I've come to realize that about myself. And I'll read all the articles. I will, you know, highlight all the books. I'll go over the maps. I will have the perfect plan, and half of the time I just never end up implementing it because I don't get enough time in the woods.
Yeah, no, reading is where it's at. I still think, you know, even in our digital age, where, you know, we don't read more than a sentence or two before we move on. Charlie Tremendous Jones, the motivational speaker of yesteryear, always said that 5 years from now, you're going to be the same person you are now, except for the people that you meet and the books that you read. And man, he is right. If you want to change the direction of your life, do something different, master a skill, whatever it is, I still think sitting down with a good book uninterrupted is a way to do it. You know, I run Rock Slide, so I'm reading digital stuff all the time. But the problem with digital is the platform that you're on is so distracting. You know, it's hard to really get deep into something. You know, it's just not what digital's made to do. And even a Kindle, you know, my book's been released on Kindle, but man, I never read it on Kindle. That would be hard for me because I'd want to jump around. But, you know, just getting into a book, and getting quiet, getting where nobody's bugging me. And, you know, I can't read a really long time. I'm reading Cam Haines' book right now, Endure. I highly recommend that for people. I'm only about a third of the way through it, but I made it a third of the way through it the first time I sat down with it because it was so engaging. But I can only read about an hour and then I'm full. You know, I need to just move away, think about what I've read, you know, let it simmer in the subconscious, you know, stuff like that. That's how I read the best. But yeah, I wouldn't say I'm a giant reader. I probably read 3 books a year, 4 books a year, something like that. You know, nothing huge, but for me, it really does give a guy an edge, and it's a great way to exercise your mind and give your mind a break in this digital world we live in.
So you mentioned you're reading Cam's new book. Are there any other books, again, aside from Hunting Big Mule Deer, that you would really recommend that are, say, in the outdoor or the hunting space? Any like personal favorites that
oh yeah, recommend? Dude, oh, absolutely. Dwight Shoes, Bow Hunting Open Country Mule Deer. That's a classic. Everybody needs to read that. Even if you're not a bow hunter, I still think there's good stuff in there about stalking and mule deer behavior. And, you know, and he's just a fun read. You know, we lost him a couple of years ago. He was a force for good in the world of bow hunting. It's a controversial book. The book's not, the guy is Kurt Garner. You know, he got into a little bit of trouble. He didn't do everything right, but you know, he's a friend. I respect the guy. He's a good guy. He just had a few troubles along the way, but it didn't negate everything that was in his book. It's called How to Find Giant Bucks, and it's a classic. It was written in 1983, and there's still so many good takeaways in that book. That's really the book that started the big mule deer revolution in my mind. And so him, Dwight Shoe, any of Walt Prothero's books, you know, Mule Deer Quest. The other one, it's kind of a plain name, but it's like Stalking Trophy Mule Deer or something like that. But okay. Walt Prothero, he was a professor here at Weber State University in Northern Utah. And, I think he just retired, and very, very prolific mule deer writer for a long time. That guy was great because he wasn't just sitting on the knob with glassing. Like he got more into the close up stuff, tracking and still hunting and stuff like that. That's really where I kind of got a start on that, on those styles of hunting, which are not as popular, but they're, you know, and especially on pressure mule deer and older mule deer, even if they're not pressured, you got to have those close range techniques down, because a lot of times that the bucks, they're just going to be in the cover. So let's see, we got those three guys. His first name is Lindsay. I can't remember his last name right now, but he released a book 2 years ago. It's on my blog. In fact, most of these books are on my blog. Or at least mentioned, but sometimes full book reviews. But it was the life story of Dennis Winch, his friend. Dennis died just a couple of years ago as well, and Dennis lived in southern Utah, and was a very prolific big buck hunter and a guide too. You know, the guides are who get the most experience. You know, there's guys that hunt, and then there's guys that hunt and guide. I like to listen to the guys that hunt and guide because they just have so much more experience. They're not just hunting their one or two tags a year. You know, they might be hunting, you know, 10 tags a year. And so Lindsay put that together. Dennis Winch, Wintch. It's on Amazon. It's a very nice book. I'm really surprised it's not getting more traction than it is. You know, it's a hardcover, big book, color. I mean, they did a good job. You know, it's $50, but you know, look at the crap we spend $50 on to make us better hunters, and it doesn't even work. You know, where this is something that would really expand your horizons on hunting big deer.
How do you spell Dennis Lynch?
Winch, Wintch, I believe. I'm probably 95% sure on that, but you can't miss it, dude. Amazon rules the world. I hate to say it, but they do. Just get on Amazon. That's where my book is, and just start typing this stuff in their search bar, and it'll come up. They've collected almost all of these books, and even if they don't, if the book is out of print, like. I think Dwight Shoes is out of print, mm-hmm. and it's they still they excuse me, they still have used copies on there. You can find them on there.
It's Lindsay Parker. Is that
Lindsay Parker? There you go. Lindsay Parker. Yeah. Yep.
Dennis Winch, Mule Deer Hunting Legend, 50 Years of Hunting Mule Deer.
There you go, bro. That's a good read. That really is a good, solid read. And, you know, a lot of little kind of short stories about Dennis's hunts that you can take out of. But, you know, he wrote for Christensen's Arms magazine for a while. I think that was called Christensen's Outdoors. He had a column in there. And so a lot of his column stuff is in there. And he was kind of more of a conversational writer, more like you and I are doing right now, just talking in his writing. And so it's not real tight writing. Mm-hmm. But it's good. Yeah, like it's flow of consciousness, and it's good stuff.
I feel like that pulls you in, though. When you have that kind of more casual style of writing, it pulls you in its own unique way, as long as it's a topic you're interested in.
Yep. And that's how Dennis was. And Dennis had a very unique trophy. And I don't want to botch it here, but because I don't have the numbers on it, but he killed a buck in the late 80s, and it was down in southern Utah, and it's one of the few bucks that makes Boone and Crockett typical and non-typical. And so what that takes for a buck to do that is to have a gigantic typical frame, because to get into non-typical, you have to net over 230. Well, non-typical means a whole bunch of deductions. And so that's what usually knocks them out of the typical category, where Dennis's made both. I mean, I think its net scores up in the high 190s, and its gross score was over 240. I mean, it's a really, really unique buck, and it had a name. I can't even remember what it was, you know, Bigfoot or Slewfoot or something like that. It's a cool story. That's in the book too. Just probably one of the top 10 mule deer ever taken, ever, you know, all times, you know, just because of its uniqueness, and just a giant. So anyways, there's that book. Do you want me to keep going?
Hey, I will not turn down any more book suggestions.
Okay. So let's see. And if you're in front of a computer right now, you can help me on some of these. So I believe Walt Prothero, 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 he's going to have a couple in there, Mule Deer Quest, Stalking Trophy Mule Deer, something like that.
Mule Deer Strategies, Stalking Mule Deer, Trophy Mule Deer.
Yeah, any of that stuff is really good too. And because he was a columnist for Sports Afield, some of the stuff is just short little chapters, kind of like my blog, just tips and tactics, which is great stuff to read. You know, it's not deep. You know, you can just jump in, you can read something in 5 minutes, and you know, stuff like that. He was really good at that style of writing, and he's a good writer. You know, he's a professor, so you know, good tight writing, mm-hmm. Not a lot of wasted words. Another book that it came out last year, and I did a full review on it on my blog, it's on Amazon. In fact, I think he only released it on Amazon. It's Dan Branigan, and it's called So You Want to Hunt the West for Mule Deer, Now What? And that book is unique in the sense of Dan is from Michigan, and that's where he grew up, cut his teeth on whitetail, came from that whole culture, and then moved out here. He actually doesn't live too far from me, but I don't know him personally. It was just a coincidence that I picked up his book and he happened to live around here. Okay. And he detailed his transition going from a whitetail hunter to a mule deer hunter. And it was so refreshing to read. It filled in a lot of gaps for me because, you know, I'm on rock slides. You know, we have 3 or 4 million unique visitors a year come to our site. A lot of them asking questions about mule deer, guys from the East that want to come out here. And sometimes I don't connect with their questions very well. You know, it's they're very basic. They're very like, wow, you didn't know that. But once I read Dan's book, I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, when you're coming from that world, that's how you're thinking. And it would be no different than if I went to Michigan and decided I was going to, you know, pursue big whitetails, not just fill in the freezer, but big whitetails. Oh man, I'd be asking all kinds of silly questions too. But his book kind of answers that stuff. And so that is a really good book for people that are like, hey, I want to go out west and hunt mule deer, but you know, I've spent my life hunting whitetails. You know, he can cover that. And I think, you know, with hunting big bucks, you know, how you think is how you hunt. And if you're thinking incorrectly, if you're, you know, believing old wives' tales or myths, or, you know, just some of the stuff that floats around that's just kind of BS, God, you're never going to get any traction. And that's what I felt like when I read his book, like, oh, okay. And he clarifies some of the stuff. Let me make a give an example is, and I never really thought about this, but mule deer are typical mule deer country. Most of our mule deer migrate, you know, there's exceptions, but most of them migrate between a summer and a winter range. And so Dan made the point in his book that depending on when you're hunting, and just 1 month or even a week can make a difference. There is large tracts of country that has good mule deer habitat, feed, everything that they need. And there's no mule deer there. and yet you can move a mile, or even shorter in some cases, or, you know, or longer, obviously, if it's a big migration. And here they all are. And so they're not evenly as evenly distributed throughout their habitat as whitetail are. Whitetail, now there's exceptions, maybe up where you live, there's, you know, they're probably having to migrate too, especially if they're mountain whitetail, but on the, especially in the east, they're more evenly distributed, you know, and so it takes part of the challenge of finding them away in that. Yeah, if I just go to whitetail country, there's going to be so many whitetail per square mile, where you can go to mule deer country and there could be zero. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so he kind of, and that's just one example of, you know, dozens in the book of kind of how he had to think and change his thinking. And it made him successful. I mean, he has done pretty dang good on mature to big bucks. For a guy that moved out here from Michigan, he really has. He hunts like a local. He knows what he's doing. He's a big family guy, takes a lot of people hunting. I think last year, gosh, they took two or three really nice bucks that he helped people on. And so that's, I'm kind of going on and on about that. That's a really good book. Two books that you should read. David Long's, he released Public Land Mule Deer, The Bottom Line in 2006. So it's been out a while. That was a really good book for the DIY kind of backpack, maybe more backpack style hunter. You know, David was, you know, just, I mean, the dude runs marathons. I mean, he's very physical dude. And, you know, he's doesn't use horses very much, you know, stuff like that. It's all on his back. And that book was written from that perspective. And David is, you know, he's probably in the top 5-10 big buck hunters in the West, you know, as far as this, the size of bucks that he's taken per day that he's hunted, you know, and the number of them. And he just lays it out. And David is a very practical writer. And David is very, I don't want to use the word scientific, but, you know, he writes from a technical angle. Mm-hmm. You know, where a writer like me, I'm more conversational stories, you know, stuff like that. David, you know, tables and, you know, top five things to do this way and, you know, how to hunt this specific habitat. You know, he's really good at that kind of stuff. So that's a book right there that I think everybody should read. And then in 2000, I think it was 17, he released the what's called The Edge. It's just The Edge. and he co-wrote it with Mike Duplan, who is a columnist for Western Hunter magazine. And that's his friend, and two, you know, very knowledgeable mule deer hunters. They hunt slightly, you know, differently from each other. So it gave two different perspectives, but that's kind of a modern version of David's first book. And David, when his first book was only rifle hunting, and by the time he got to his second book, he had picked up archery and done very well at it. You know, per day hunted, the dude did very well at archery hunting, you know, big mule deer. And so I think he lays out the best advice for guys wanting to archery hunt big mule deer. You know, he's got chapters in there on the subject and scenarios and tips and tactics and anecdotes and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Where even my book, I've been a big buck hunter with a bow for 20 years, but, you know, I'm still, it's just one of the weapons I hunt with. So, you know, I don't have a lot of depth in my book about archery hunting mule deer. You know, I've only taken three big bucks with my bow and, you know, almost 20 years. Not, you know, I go 6 or 7 years without even getting one. So I'm not the go-to guy on that kind of stuff, but David is. He's really, really good. In fact, when people ask me about, yeah, I want to archery hunt big bucks, it's only him and Dwight Shue's book, but Dwight Shue's book was written in the 80s. So it doesn't have all the modern equipment and optics and everything in it. those are the only two books I'm really pushing people towards right now on archery hunting big mule deer. Another one, and it's not just on mule deer, but Chuck Adams, the books, he wrote two books, and I don't have the names of them right now. He probably wrote more than that, but he's got good mule deer content within his books. And, you know, he took some great bucks with his bow. He's a really good one to follow as
Let's see, we got,
go ahead.
The Complete Book of Bow Hunting and Super Slam Adventures with North American Big Game are what I'm seeing on Amazon right now.
Those two, and again, they're not just mule deer because he hunted everything, but they're good reads. He was a good writer. You can kind of follow his life journey on how he pulled off that Super Slam, which was not really funded by big money. It was funded by himself. A lot of people assume that, but you know, he pulled that off pretty much on his own. And he's got some good mule deer stuff in there. It's, you know, it's short. You're going to learn a lot more than about mule deer in there, but he was just a great bow hunter, one of the greatest. And I did full book reviews on those two books on my blog. You know, it's been a few years back, but I just thought, you know, these are needed reading for guys that want to up their game. You know, one of the bow hunting greats. Let's see.
This is a fantastic list. I think you may have just screwed up my budget for the for the rest of this month. I can't help myself when it comes to books. That's the one thing I struggle to ever talk myself out of is picking up new books. You know, there was something you were talking a little bit about when we were talking about Dan Branigan, kind of in his book, talking about those differences between whitetail and the mule deer and how the mule deer aren't as evenly populated throughout the habitat. Is that more of a behavior thing, or would you say that's more of a population thing? There's just not, I mean, whitetail, or you can't drive down the road in some states without swerving around three of them, versus muleys, the populations, you're not seeing as much as that.
I think it's going to be both, and it's going to depend on where you're at. There's obviously more whitetail habitat in the United States. There are more adaptable deer. They can live, a few live in the mountains. You know, mountains by my definition, big mountains, there's a few. But you know, they inhabit the lower country, and there's just a lot more of that. So I think it's both. It's going to be from a population standpoint, you know, and mule deer, you know, there's less of them. Millions of whitetails, you know, maybe if a million mule deer, you know, something like that. I don't know my numbers exact, but so that's going to be some of it right there. But they're migratory. So, you know, you can go up on the Kaibab and we're starting now in northern Arizona, and between now and the end of June, you know, there'd be thousands of mule deer moving up into that country. You go back there the middle of December after a couple of big snowstorms, there's zero. And they've moved anywhere from 5 miles to 50 miles. I mean, it's, you know, and whitetails just aren't doing that. So I think it's going to depend on where they're at, and then also, you know, the densities as well.
Okay. So yeah, I was just kind of curious if it was like specifically a behavioral thing where they tend to clump up more, or if it's just, if it has to do, it sounds like it's a little bit of both with the how migratory they are, but it's just also we're not seeing as many mule deer as we are whitetail. What do you see as the future of mule deer? I mean, both mule deer and whitetail have been in trouble in the past, and because of the adaptability of whitetail, you know, I mean, again, they're practically a nuisance animal in a lot of states versus mule deer. We're not seeing the numbers. What kind of future do you think mule deer have in the U.S.?
Future's bright, but it's up to us. And every place mule deer have been managed, they do well. So, you know, I've got a long history with mule deer. I can think back over the decades on population rises and falls, and, you know, buck to doe ratios up and down. And I can tell you this, if we take care of them, they do pretty dang good. And I'd give the best example, the most recent example of Colorado. And when then in 1999, they moved from a general over the counter, unlimited, basically unlimited tag structure for mule deer to a limited license structure where you had to draw and they could manage each mule deer herd individually instead of the old system, which was really just statewide. I mean, all the seasons were the same, buy a tag, go anywhere. You know, it was that style of hunting. And once they moved to that, it only took like 3 or 4 years and the deer were coming out our ears. Big bucks, populations were doing well. I mean, they just were killing it. And, you know, then they, you know, mule deer are always subject to hard winters, you know, just by where they live and the whole migratory thing I was talking about. They experienced a decline in the mid 2000s after that management had come in, but they rebounded and they did well. They've had a good run for another 13, 14 years. Now they've started to change this again and they're saying it's because of CWD and that big bucks, old bucks spread it more. You know, I'm waiting, still waiting for more research. I'm not arguing with the research that's been done, but you know, when there's not a whole lot and it's fairly new, it's always subject to change, but they're trying to manage for a younger age class of buck right now. So they're putting more pressure on them. That probably won't hurt the overall population, but it will lower the buck to doe ratio. And so my whole point in telling you all that is they're very responsive to it. And there's exciting things happening in like Wyoming right now is they're funding these underpasses on these migration corridors. And deer typically migrate in certain places. Just think of bottlenecks. Now, you know, they may be wandering off a mountain range that's 30 miles long and heading for, you know, winter range, it's 80 miles away. And it starts as a very broad mouth on a funnel, but they hit these bottlenecks, which could just be passes. It can just be, inhabited valleys, you know, where humans live, and they may only use, and they may cross in an area that's as little as a quarter mile wide, that like that's their funnel for whatever reason. And Wyoming is protecting those now through easements, land purchases, and where they cross highways, which are detrimental to mule deer. And you know, we might drive down the highway and, you know, you see a deer every mile and you don't, well, that's not very much, but man, you don't see all the deer that are laying off in the brush. You know, the studies that have been done is, you know, I can't even remember if it's a majority or it's significant amount. They don't die within sight of the road. It probably is a majority. If you think about it, you're only seeing the ones that are killed instantly. And so you do that for 4 or 5 or 6 months, you know, that's a lot of dead deer that you just don't really think about. And there's one unit around here. I remember everybody was bitching and moaning about, oh, no big bucks, blah, 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 close the season, do all this other stuff. And this good old biologist was like, well, we can close all the season, but we've ran the numbers and we kill like double on the highway that we kill in hunting season. And that was a real eye opener for me. Like, wow, you know, really didn't even think about it that way. That's a lot of deer. And so Wyoming is building these underpasses where these bottlenecks are, you know, and these things cost millions of dollars. They really do. But it's you know, it's a species we need to take care of. You know, I mean, we spend millions of dollars on saving a salamander. You know, why can't we do it on mule deer? And we are. These states are studying these migrations, and I'm highlighting Wyoming right now because I think they're kind of at the forefront of it. You know, they've got a lot of, I don't remember what their project's called, Wild Wyoming Initiative or something like that, but where they're studying these migration routes extensively, you know, radio collared, GPS transmitting collars, so they know, you know, they know the name of that doe. They know where she summered, where she had her fawn, where her transitional range is. And now they've got all these data sets on these deer and they've got bucks collared too. And they're figuring this out on where we need to protect these deer. And, you know, it's okay to build a subdivision here, but man, don't build it right here. You know, stuff like that. So I think to answer your question, that's a long, long answer. If we take care of them, they're going to take care of us. I'm not a doom and gloomer. I can't be. If I'm a doom and gloomer, mule deer are their better days are gone. They're going to die out. They're going to go extinct. Dude, I'm selling my rifles. I'm selling my horses. I'm done because I ain't going to be able to even get my mind into it once I get in the woods, you know, and I'm just talking about Robbie Denning. Maybe other guys are different, but I see guys, talk to guys. I don't hunt with guys like this because I purposely stay away from them. They are so down in the mouth about mule deer. And it was better when grandpa was around. around and blah, 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 blah. Well, you know what? None of us have a time machine to go into the past. We got to deal with what we got now. And the best thing we can do is join the Mule Deer Foundation, get involved in these local chapters, buy hunting licenses. That's conservation. And, you know, I burn licenses every year that I buy that I, you know, maybe I don't even get to hunt them, but it's like, okay, well, at least that money went to the state. And I know our fishing game organizations are not perfect, but they're the only ones really taking care of these deer. So I'm happy supporting them is what I'm getting at. You know, go to meetings, you know, get involved, do all that other stuff. But, you know, don't be the guy that just, oh, I drew my tag and I went out and I hunted 3 days. This sucks. And, you know, man, just don't even go hunt something else that there's a lot more of. You know, honestly, even when mule deer populations are doing well, big bucks are hard to get. You know, they really are. And so I think the future is what we're going to make it for mule deer. I really do. Maybe I've got rose colored glasses, but that's okay. That keeps me hunting. And, you know, I spend thousands of dollars on mule deer a year. And that's why, because, you know, I love them and I want to hand it down to the next generation. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take people to care.
Well, I mean, I think it ties back to, kind of what you said earlier. What was the line you used? It was how you think is how you hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it, to me, that kind of like with what you were saying here. Yeah. If your mindset is that you're never going to find a big mule deer and it just, the hunting sucks and, you know, oh, it's fishing game's fault. Oh, it's out of state hunter's fault. Oh, it's, it's everyone's fault, but myself, but my own, you know, because I'm perfect. Of course, you're not going to start seeing big mule deer. Of course, you're not going to get anything. Like, yep. I'm surprised you even get out of your truck at that point. Like, really?
Yep. That's what I mean. We're talking the same game. I think it applies to fishing, sports, whatever. You know, how you think is how you're going to perform. And so if I do have rose colored glasses, that's fine by me. It keeps me rolling.
And don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not by far. I try not to be, but so often when I'm in the woods, I'm trudging around all doom and gloom, like screwing everything up and I'm never going to see anything. And, but then I have to catch myself and sometimes maybe just take a day back at the campsite and start over the next day.
Oh yeah. I do that too, man. So, I mean, sometimes we just, you know, hunting's hard. Hunting wears on you, you know, and hunting is always harder than what we make it in our minds. And so there's always a disconnect when we get somewhere that's like, you know, the days wear on, the grind kicks in. And this, any species, not just mule deer. I mean, you know, the best hunters I know are all positive thinkers, put it that way, because they can put their mind to the task long enough to be successful, and they can hunt through the hard times and the emotion of it all. And it's just far too easy to sit at your computer and apply for tags and look at Google Earth and do all this other stuff. You get so flipping pumped up, man, I'm gonna conquer the world. You get out there after a day and a half and you ain't seeing what you're finding. It's mentally a challenge, and that catches a lot of people off guard.
It's a struggle, and that's probably, you know, arguably I would say that's probably the hardest part of hunting is the mental aspect.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, I would say that the mental aspect, the mental challenge of it is what sends more guys home with empty tags than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com.
So you hunt mule deer and you pretty much don't hunt anything. I mean, do you go out for anything else, or is it just, I mean, it's just mule deer?
Just mule deer. I take my son. He wanted to go elk hunting, so I've taken him out. We've got some cow elk tags that are open east of where I live here, and that's a pretty good hunt. I've taken him out on it, but I have not. I don't think I've bought a elk tag since 04, 05. And it's not that I wouldn't, you know, it's just, mule deer hunting for big mule deer, mature bucks, 4 years and older, it's hard. And you know, I don't want to like make it sound like I'm some, you know, suffering servant out here, the poor, poor me. I'm just saying it's hard and it wears on you. And what I've learned, this is what I learned. I learned it when I got married and we started to have kids. Focus is my superpower. And if I am screwing around hunting bears and fishing for steelhead and hunting turkeys and elk and all these other things, those are number one. And a lot of guys, my younger crowd will understand this. It costs money. All right. And so you know, that limits how much I can do at other times of the year. You know, if I'm blowing all my funds on hunting all these other species, because, you know, when I hunt turkeys, I want to do it right. You know, I'm going to spend a lot of time out there, a lot of gas, a lot of travel, stuff like that. And same with bears. I used to hunt bears a lot. Archery hunt bears. I've taken one bear with my bow and one with my muzzleloader. But again, it was just more time and more days. And so then when it's time to hunt mule deer, well, I've spent part of my time and money budget and energy budget. This is a lot of things. Something I did not understand until I got older is you only got so much good energy to hunt. And what by good energy, I mean focused hunting days where you're actually productive. All right. I'm not the kind of guy that thinks, yeah, just showing up is going to do it. No, you can show up in mule deer country for 50 years and never get a big buck. You know, you got to do it right. You got to work your techniques right. And you can, and something to remember about hunting big mule deer, you can be doing everything right, still not get one. That's just how it is. So that takes a lot of time and energy. And for me, for my personality, it drains me. And so when I was trying to do all that other stuff, I just was not putting my best foot forward for mule deer. You know, by the time, man, if you call me mid-November, dude, you'll hear it in my voice. I'm tired by then. You know, I have been looking for big bucks since early July in some form or another, you know, 1 to 6 days a week. You know, you keep that up for 3 or 4 months, it wears on you. And so it is easy for me to say, you know what, I just saw a 330 bull down in that canyon and the season is actually open. I am so glad I don't have an elk tag because I would be down there chasing that sucker. And because I used to do that. I used to try to do all that stuff. And I'm not saying this is the way you have to do it. This is just the way I do it. Because, dude, there's some very successful multi-weapon hunters out there. Tony Treach, he wrote a chapter for my latest book that's coming out. And he's a multi-weapon archery rifle. He probably would hunt with a muzzleloader if he had an opportunity. And I mean, hunts bulls, bucks. I mean, he's really good at what he does, and he's just built that way. But I'm not, you know, focus. I said it when I started, that's my superpower. That's if the more I focus, the better I do. But the more I focus, kind of the more I kind of got to let some of these other things that are sort of distractions right now. Dude, I used to love to fish. Catching big river fish was my thing. And I kind of had to get out of it here for about the last 20 years. And you know, fishing, like that's right now. Why would going fishing today impact my mule deer hunt in October? Well, let me tell you why, dude. I've got 5 horses. I'm taking care of 32 acres between growing hay and pasture for the horses. They don't need all 32. We sell a lot of that hay. But that's all money that goes back into my hunting budget. And take a lot of guys get out of horses because they're a full-time job. Yep, exactly. So dude, if I'm off running the river today and I'm not out here fixing fence and irrigating and everything, I'm getting behind. And so by the time, you know, July rolls around when I really need to be out there doing this stuff, I am not where I need to be. And so that's kind of how I have to think a little bit. Now, my dad is getting older. He can't really get out and hunt at all, almost at all, but he can fish. And so I am carving out days and happy to do it. I'm going to rent a drift boat this summer and I'm going to take my dad down the river because that's what he used to do with me when I was, you know, 15 years old. And, you know, he made sure I got out there. I'm going to do that stuff. I really am. I don't want to make it sound like just nope, I'll never do that stuff. But it's not going to be for me. It's going to be for him. And it's not that I didn't fish the last 20 years, but I did the kids fishing, you know, a lot of ponds, a lot of bobbers, you know, stuff like that. A lot of, you know, getting out on the water at 10 a.m., which to me is like, we just missed the best 4 hours. You know, what are we doing out here? But, you know, so it's, I don't want to make it sound like it's just all mule deer, you know, mule deer or nothing. I'm not at all, but it's where I had to put my focus is really where, and that's where I'm at in my life right now. That doesn't mean things won't change. I would love to get back into river fishing and fishing big fish and everything, but you know, I'm still raising kids, dude. I'm out on my back patio right now, because if I'm in my house recording this, you're going to hear all my kids getting ready for school and, you know, fighting and who's in the bathroom. You know, I'm in that stage of my life right now. And, you know, as things change and everything, I might be able to do a few more things like that. But as of right now, it's just better for me to focus on big bucks.
So that's why you focus on hunting mule deer, so you can be as effective as possible while hunting them. But what is it about mule deer? So why focus on mule deer and not elk or not bear? Why that particular focus on big muley bucks?
Dude, it's just what lit my fire. I did all that stuff. I've killed 4 elk with my bow, 3 bulls and 1 cow. I killed 2 bears. Steelhead fishing was huge to me. I love that. I wouldn't say I was super good at it, but you know, spent a lot of time on it. Just loved that lifestyle.
I mean, if I had to be super good at something to enjoy it, I wouldn't enjoy anything. So
yeah. And that's just that's what I mean for my personality. That's just me. You know, when I was steelhead fishing, I was into it. You know, I was meeting the guys that were the best at it. I was doing everything I could to get good at it. It's just how I'm wired. I mean, I, if you can't tell, dude, I'm diagnosed ADHD. You know, I talk fast, talk over myself. You know, my mind's running faster than my body can. I mean, it's just how I'm built. I've always been that way. And but to answer your question, big mule deer, out of all that stuff I just talked about, they were the most challenging, and it could just be, you know, the difficulty of getting them. Maybe there's not as many. I don't know. Elk are going crazy right now, dude. I'm seeing 320, 340 bulls every year on OTC tags. I mean, it's a great time to be an elk hunter. I got a little bored. And it's not that I was shooting 330 bulls. I was not, but I just got a little bored with that pursuit. I really did. And mule deer, it just had to be the challenge that kept drawing me back. And every time I would succeed at it, you know, I wanted to go another level. I wanted to do it again, you know? And so I'm not getting it into words, but to me, it was just the most exciting of everything that I was doing. So that's why I went that direction.
See, for me, it's always been elk, but I suspect that may also be because I haven't encountered a real, like, I've seen a few in the distance, like good sized mule deer, but I haven't, I don't know. I haven't had an encounter with like a really big muley buck. And I think I question whether or not my passion for elk has to do with the fact that I've just seen more of them or what it is. So I am curious, you know, on that day that I finally kind of run into that big mule deer buck, how my focus is going to change. Because for me, it's always been like my season, it's elk season. And then if I get a whitetail or a mule deer, awesome. Like, you know, if I see one, I'll go after it. But, you know, I'm not going to go out chasing muleys unless my elk tag is filled. And so I'm interested to see how in the, you know, upcoming years that changes or if it does.
Yeah, and again, that's why I keep mentioning personality, because I think a lot of it's tied to our personality. How are we wired? How did God make us? Like, what are we made to do? What turns our crank? You know, I started college as an electrical engineer and was doing okay with it. But I was looking around at these guys I was in college with, and like, for lack of a better term, these guys were nerds. In a good way, like just detail smart, like, dude, we're staying up tonight and we're studying for the calculus test. And you know, I mean, they're as pumped up for that as, you know, I am for hunting big bucks. And I just felt like I'm just a big fake. I don't even fit in with these guys. You know, that was really my at least 50% of my decision to go with an English major. And so, yeah, dude, I'm that guy that just has an English degree. But dude, that's what charged me up, man, is I wanted to write. You know, I want all those books I just told you about, dude. You know, there's more than what I told you about. You know, I was reading all that stuff when I was 17, 18, 19, you know, all that kind of stuff. And dude, that's what lit me up, you know. So I just kind of discovered then that's how I'm built. That's how God made me. And so this is one of the things I need to pursue. And dude, I am much happier with an English degree than I ever would have been with an engineering degree. And by the grace of God, I've been able to kind of navigate it and do really well with it. And, you know, it's, but my whole point in all this, dude, is I just figured out that's how I'm made, and I'm different than you, and you're different than me. We're not better than each other. It's just how we are. And so, you know, when I get on a podcast, you know, I always try to just point people out that this is just what I like to do. It doesn't mean you got to be like me to be successful at it. And that's why I mentioned Tony Treach. Jason Carter's another one. Very good, big buck hunter, you know, probably killed the most 200 inch bucks of probably anybody walking right now. But dude, he hunts other things too. It seems like he's more and more getting focused on mule deer, but you know, he's a great, great hunter of all species, you know? So we're all a little bit different. I want to make sure that, you know, if you're out there thinking, but man, I really do like hunting elk. Oh, that's all good, man. Just take some of the stuff that I've learned and apply that. And I think you're going to do better, you know? But when I was just kind of being the jack of all trades, master of none, it just wasn't very fulfilling to me. And I remember being on an elk hunt in 94, one of my last bow hunts for elk. And it was the first week of September. I'm like, man, I need to be up on those big ridges. There's big bucks up there. I know where there's a big buck. And, you know, when I was trying to help my buddy get an elk, and you know, I was just dying. I remember I just hated it. I'm just like, man, I got an elk last year. I don't even really want to be here. And I remember him just begging me, dude, like, dude, please, man, let's just stay. I don't think I bagged him, but I think I was like, I don't want to stay any extra time. I want to go buck hunting. It was some scenario like that. And I remember him just like, dude, come on, please. But dude, I it was the best decision I made. And the reason I remember that hunt is because that was my last time I ever picked up a bow and went for elk. And I just started putting that time towards mule deer. And honestly, I suck at big buck hunting with a bow. I've only killed 3 big bucks in, you know, 17, 18 years, something like that. But, it was just more fulfilling to me. You know, it was where I was supposed to be, or when I was trying to divide my time between buck hunting and elk hunting, I just didn't feel like I was giving either one of them a very good effort.
So, you know, I like I said, most of my focus has been on elk. My very first tag filled was a little muley buck. And you can actually, I'm not sure if you can see him. That's him right there behind me.
There's a great big notification on my phone about meeting recorded, blah, 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 blah. And I can't get rid of it. So, dude, I can't see you anyways.
Well, he's a tiny little mule deer buck. He was in velvet and little awesome. Spike. Yeah, got down in Arizona. And I love him to death. You know, he'll always kind of, he's right here behind me on the wall. Mm-hmm. Always have kind of that place of honor.
Oh, yeah.
As my first buck.
You bet, dude. That's great. I've got mine right here in the garage. In fact, I'm walking around the corner right now, dude. It's a 2x3. Where is it? It's hanging here somewhere. It's a little dinky 2x3, dude. And I'm like, you know what? Oh, here it is right here. I'm like, this buck in a big way is the one that started it all. I did not kill a mule deer from 12 years old till I was 19. And I hunted every single year in great mule deer hunt country with good mule deer hunters. And dude, part of it was I was just a terrible shot. I'm still not that great. But this buck, just like the one behind you on the wall, dude, it represents something, you know? And so yeah, dude, it's not just about big, big mule deer. I mean, that's where I'm at right now. But no, dude, I honor them all. I'm with you. I'm glad you got that buck hanging on the wall.
No, yeah, I love him to death. But, you know, always trying to improve. You know, I've heard you say before that these big muley bucks are almost like they can almost be classified as their own like subspecies compared to the mm-hmm. younger age class. What does that entail? Like, what are the differences you see as these bucks get older and gain kind of more life experience, I guess?
because in hunted units, they they disappear. They just be once they get to velvet rub, or even maybe even before that, they are just not seen very often, and it starts making you think that they're not around. And that's why scouting's so important, so you can verify that they are, so that when you quit seeing them, that you know that, wow, no, he's just right here. And they have an affinity for cover, and they become more like a blacktail on the West Coast, where my Oregon and Washington hunting brothers live. That you know, they don't shoot anything over 100 yards. A lot of shoot a lot of stuff 20 yards. Doesn't really matter if you're hunting with a bow or a rifle. You know, you got to get in close to them. They become more that way. And the reason I keep saying hunted units, because yeah, you can, you know, I get friends that are, I killed a big buck out west here a couple of years ago with my muzzleloader, and I shot him at like 70 yards in the cover. He lab aged at 5 years old, 27 inch buck. I was real, real happy with him, and I posted it somewhere, and there was a guy that lived out there, and he was just like one unit over. And I was just saying that, hey man, these bucks are in the cover. You know, this is where I'm seeing them. Yeah, there's lots of mule deer in other places, but the big bucks were in the cover even during the rut. He's like, no, they're all out here running around the sagebrush. I'm looking at them right now. And so I looked at the regs, and I'm like, yeah, dude, your season's been closed for 3 weeks. And he was like, oh yeah. I said, but seriously, that's the difference right there. Those bucks are smart. And when they're hunted, dude, they hide. They hide. I think they hide better than a whitetail, a bull, anything else. I really do. And yet it can be 1 or 2 days after the season and boom, here they are. I mean, it's just amazing to me how they are. And so what you said about, I think of them as a subspecies. I know there's probably a biologist out there rolling his eyes. They're not really a subspecies, but they're different than the species itself. That's why I say that, because they just, those things I said, they just become more secretive, harder to find. I mean, they are just vampires. That, you know, I don't want to say they're totally nocturnal. They are crepuscular. They do come out in the evenings and the mornings and stuff, and sometimes in the middle of the day if you know where to look, but they're just a lot harder to find, and they just change. And as an extension to that, I'm not ever going to get into the whole thing that mule deer are smarter than whitetails or anything like that. I'm not going to do that. But I do think younger whitetails are more savvy than younger mule deer. The younger mule deer, the 1 to 3 year old mule deer, they're the ones that give mule deer a bad name, dude. they are out in the open, you know, all hours of the day. I hate to use the word dumb, but they don't do well around rifles. You know, they just can't seem to hide.
Well, I mean, I think we've all seen the young mule deer that you spook. It runs, you know, 50-100 yards and turns around. It's like, mm-hmm. Huh, what was that?
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. And so then sometimes I've heard people that haven't hunted old mule deer, they characterize all mule deer as doing that. And it's like, no, not for the most part. You know, big bucks, they don't give you any second chances. Rarely, sometimes they don't even give you a first chance. Where, yeah, those little bucks, you don't see a whitetail do that as often, right? They don't just run out there and stop at 50 yards and watch you, or 100 yards or whatever. You know, once they're moving, they're moving. You know, we've got a few whitetails around here. I would characterize myself as a whitetail hunter, but you know, I've been around them. I've killed one with my bow, and they're a little more savvy at those younger ages. It takes a mule deer kind of getting to 4 years old plus before they take on those characteristics. And so that's why I think of them as a different animal, because if you hunt them like the rest of the herd, you're not going to see them. For the most part, you're just not going to see them. And that's where a lot of guys get down in the mouth about it. And I hear it every year. There's no big bucks. You know, all I saw was does and forkies, and you know, I'll figure out where the guy's hunting. I'm like, oh yeah, there's a big buck right there, dude. I saw him, you know, 2 years ago or whatever. I know somebody that's hunted there, or I know bucks that have come out of there that, oh, they're there. You're just not looking where they're at. And you know, mule deer country is beautiful. They live in open country for the most part. And so it's really easy to just spend all your time looking in that country. And sometimes they're there, but the bigger bucks, you know, they're, they can't be, or they wouldn't be alive. That's why I keep mentioning hunted units. You know, if it's a hunted unit with, you know, a significant amount of tags in it, which is most of the West, they're not going to be out in that open country. They would be dead if they were.
Do you think that's probably the biggest problem that guys have when it comes to hunting mule deer, is that they have this expectation that they're going to behave kind of this certain way based on the younger age class? So they never change their tactics.
Mm-hmm. I do. I wrote a big article in my upcoming book. I've already forgot the name of it, Defining the Mule Deer Rut. And I did a seminar at Hunt Expo in Salt Lake on it back in February, and I turned it into an article. And that's what that was about, is that you cannot base your hunting techniques on what you're seeing. You need to base it on what the calendar says and what big bucks are doing on these certain dates of the on the calendar between October 20th and December 20th. You're going to have better success doing that than observation is key. I mean, that's the kind of the basis of our pursuit, is observation. But yeah, observation will lie to you, because we can't see at night, and we don't see what's going on at night with these big bucks and what they're up to. And until you start tracking them, and I guess you can use night vision now in some places, but you still can't look at very many big bucks that way, you'll see that that they are around much more than we think they are. But by the time that the sun peaks over the horizon, and they're just going to be a lot harder to find. It doesn't matter if it's the rut or not. And so, yeah, we can't just hunt by observation. I've made that mistake many, many times. And you got to know what you're looking for. And it gets back to that whole thinking thing.
So, I mean, is it then a matter of tracking them and finding them in their beds, or what's the magic bullet here for killing a big mule deer?
Well, it all depends. Like right now, I'm talking about the rut. It all depends on the time of year. So, you know, staying on that theme, is I think why the calendar matters, is because right around October 20th, things start to change, and you start getting your first does in estrus. And this will have a little bit to do with the moon phase, and you know, when the full moon falls in October and things like that, which I don't have all the secrets to, but I know that, you know, the research that's been done on whitetails, that's key, is when that full moon falls in October. But let's just say that the rut, you know, the reason I picked October 20th, it's the earliest I've observed it starting. And you see these does first start to cycle into estrus, and that's what puts the bucks on the move. And so what I see at that time of year is large expanses of buck country with no bucks in it. And that it's because they are now looking for does. They are moving to where the does are. And it's not just a function of finding the does and like, oh, there's the does, so the big buck should be right here. No, it's understanding that he still feels very vulnerable around those does. Does are going to inhabit, you know, more open country. They're not hunted as much in most places. I'm not saying they're not wary, but they're not as wary as a big buck typically. Maybe that lead doe is, but you know, they're just easier to find. Well, a buck is going to feel vulnerable and being out there checking those does. And so he's very careful about when he goes around them, and it's almost always at night. I've seen this by their tracks on the ground, and you know, many guys have verified it with trail cameras and night scopes and stuff like that, that they'll be around these does before legal shooting light. But as soon as legal shooting light comes, you know, they're retreating back into the cover. They're not very far from them, I believe. They know what that smell in the air is. You know, we're talking sex here, people. You know, they know what that is. They're not, you know, gets back to that thinking thing. I get guys telling me, oh, they're not rutting right now. They're back on these big peaks. You know, they're getting ready for the rut. Oh, no. It's Friday night at the bar. They know what's going on. They're right here somewhere. And so you gotta be prepared to try to find a bunch of does at that time, because, you know, there's not a lot of big bucks. And so, you know, it's not that every group of does is going to have a big buck around them, but that's where I'm going to start. And then, on my tracking jobs, then they tend to be very long. Like it seems like the bucks are going from group to group to group, covering a lot of country. And so it's very hard to track them then, you know, because they can, you know, compared to like a month earlier, you know, I've had tracking jobs that are as short as 400 yards. You know, they're just not moving very much. But, you know, you get into to the rut, you know, they can move a mile in 20 minutes, you know, and that, and I don't care if you're Cam Haynes. I mean, if that's rough country, you can't cover the ground as fast. And so, so that's what I see happening then. And then as I get into about November 10th is when I think the peak of the rut really starts to kick in. And, you know, that's shown by the, studies that have been done on the does when the fawns are born. You know, most of them are getting bred right around mid-November. The bucks do get very, even the big bucks, they're going to drop their guard at that time, but you still got to be around the cover. And, you know, you just have more of a chance of catching them out at 10:30 in the morning and stuff like that. And there's exceptions to all of this. I mean, you'll see one in my book, a guy, you know, caught a big buck just last year when we had an early rut last year, October 22nd, right in the does at 11 a.m. But that's an anomaly. That's a unicorn. You know, we can't count on that. I typically don't see that till, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th of November. And so I don't want to say you can get a little sloppier then. You can't. You still have to hunt right, but you've got a better chance of them dropping their guard. And I see that continue clear up till about Thanksgiving. But then after that, as the number of does and estrus drops off, you know, a lot of them have been bred, the buck activity drops off a little bit too, and they can get a little bit harder to find. And because these mule deer are migrational, most of them, not all of them, that's the other challenge, is you're trying to keep track of them as they migrate, you know? And so where there was a bunch of does Thursday and now it's Sunday, it's like, man, we're down like 80% on does here. And, you know, the math is going to say we're going to be down that much on bucks too. And so, you know, it's just all these little things that are coming together. And I think what the challenge is it's hard to observe this with your eyes. You know, you have to, you know, cause they're in the trees, you know, that's the whitetail guys are the masters of that. You know, they're in the trees too. They're up in the trees. You know, they know what's going on. We're mule deer hunters, you know, are typically not, you know, we're looking more at the open country. So I'm kind of going on and on. I don't know if I'm giving you your answer there, but that's really, you know, that time of year, I'm keying in on the does and I'm never getting very far from them is kind of my tactic then. Where earlier in the season, it's more about, you know, just hunting the bucks in the rougher country where, you know, they tend to separate themselves from the does and, you know, got different challenges then. But, you know, a lot of times are a little bit easier to find then.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
So as far as mule deer go, you know, I'm used to talking elk. The bulls will go and they'll kind of gather cows to them. With the muleys, it sounds like what you're saying is more the does will gather and the bucks will go to these different groups of does. They don't really kind of bring them along with them.
No, they're not a herding animal like a bull. You know, sometimes everything, there's an exception to everything. And yeah, that's why I want to be careful about, you know, I don't want to make these grand statements that this is how it always is, but, you know, for the most part, big bucks, 4 years old and older, and especially the old grumpy ones, you know, we're talking 7, 8, 9 years old. I don't think they want to be in with that big herd of does myself. This is just simply my opinion. They have to be to get one. You know, they may be around them, but if you watch them closely, they're usually keying in on the one that's in estrus. They're trying to peel her away from that herd. And I think what they want, they're, if they could choose, they want to get her alone. They want to get her away from all those other deer because they're out in the open. They're more vulnerable. You know, he's not stupid. He still knows that that's trouble being out where everybody can see me. And he wants to get her back in the cover. And that's where he wants to breed. And I think he'll hold on to her for a day or two. Until she gets to, you know, full estrus, whatever you call it. I don't know if that's even a scientific term, but ready to breed. And then he breeds her, and then he's on to the next one. And I think that's what he wants to do. And, I think when you see a big buck with a bunch of does, I think he's not down with that. That's just what he has to do to get a doe. And if you're given enough time and the situation, you're going to see him try to get her alone is what he's going to try to do. And if you ever get lucky enough to really observe that when he's got her alone, she's very distracted too. I mean, she knows that they're perpetuating the species, and she yields to that for that brief amount of time, you know. And where when she's not quite in estrus, you know, she's playing hard to get, you know, she's making him chase her all over the place, which makes him vulnerable too. I don't think he likes running, you know, wide open across the sagebrush. You know, that's wasting energy. It's making himself vulnerable, tired. You know, I think he really just wants to break away and get her alone. And then, so that's what they're trying to do. I think that's their gold standard.
I mean, you know, I really can't blame him. You know, the older I get myself, the less I want to spend Friday nights at the bar. So
there you go, dude.
sorry, I started laughing. I'm choking on my own spit.
That's all right. Well, hey, I'll fill in the gap there. We're with elk. You know, I'm an outfitter too, dude. I'm an outfitter too, and so I get plenty of elk experience because we operate on private land. I do semi guided hunts for guys where I'm not hunting with them all the time, but I'm, you know, orienting them with the properties, checking in with them each day, you know, stuff like that, giving them advice. And so, you know, I get to be around elk. And what I've noticed back the whole elk herding thing is the elk are not, the bulls or the big bulls are not as worried about getting a lone cow. They will control that whole herd, you know, and that they will circle that herd. They'll spend all their energy doing that. And I've seen that, you know, clear into late October, you know, and so that's kind of the difference that I see with them and mule deer. I'm not saying that makes bulls easier, you know, cause you got all those cows too. You got to try to get past and everything. But that makes them a little more visible, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. So are there any other, you know, must learn techniques or anything, any other tips that are really unique to somebody that's maybe, you know, they've got a few muleys under their belt, you know, whether that's, you know, a spike here or there, or, you know, just a couple of forkies, you know, younger age class kind of stuff. And they're really wanting to get their hands on at least one, you know, bigger, older age class mule deer. Are there any other, you know, tips or techniques or anything they should keep in mind for this season?
Yeah. And I'll give my first book a plug on that. The title of my first book is Hunting Big Mule Deer, subtitle, How to Take the Best Buck of Your Life. That subtitle is what's going to answer your question, because that's where we separate the chaff from the wheat right there, is that if you want to take the best buck of your life, you have got to focus on different hunting techniques and the nuances of mule deer hunting. And that's why in my book, in my articles, I always say, yeah, glassing is your number one technique. Definitely. I spend a lot of time glassing. It can't be your only technique, especially in hunted units. Now, if you have an excellent draw tag and there's only 20 people in 100 square miles, okay, some of the stuff you can throw out the window. But if you're hunting hunted bucks, it's going to get down to the tracking and the still hunting more so, or as much as the glassing. Now, that doesn't mean you're still not spotting and stalking. Yeah, you know, that's kind of the essence of mule deer hunting. That's what you're doing. But where the disconnect is between the spot and the stalk is where a lot of us fall apart. And I still experience this sometimes, is because those big bucks go in the cover. And now what do I do? And, you know, the patient thing, the thing that sells articles is like, oh, I sat there for 5 days. I was as patient as a rock, and that can work. I'm not discounting that, but that can also backfire big time. And I've learned this from Jason Carter. You got to kill them when you see them. You got to figure out how to kill them when you see them, you know, as quickly as you can, and quickly maybe 4 hours. But, you know, because once you can't corner a big mule deer. You know, so I use that term loosely, but once you got them cornered, you know where they're at. You probably can't just wait for them to repeat their morning routine. They probably won't. You know, they'll do something different. They will hand you your butt on a plate. They will they will do something different, and then they're gone and you got to refind them. And so figuring out how to kill them, and that's where all these other little sub techniques, tracking, still hunting, you know, all those things, ambush hunting, that's a huge one, it come into play. And the thing about all those, and where I get a little, I hate to sound like, and you were saying it a minute ago, making fun of it. You're right. You know, what's the silver bullet? there's not one. And that's what I want to make sure that guys understand is you can glass, still hunt, track, ambush hunt. You can do all of that stuff correctly for years and still not get a big buck. But you have to keep working those processes to get a big buck. You have to. Those things will be in play when you get a big buck on purpose. Not talking about the guy that got lucky. Luck is overrated. Luck is finicky. I want to do it on purpose. But you'll find when you do it on purpose that those things will have come together in some part of a scenario that allowed you to do that. And guys should just go to Amazon and read the reviews on my book, because I'm writing my second book. My editor had me go in and read some of those and see if there's anything we could pull out, you know, put in the new book. And so I was reading through them just in the last couple of days, and it was interesting to see that this is getting right back to your question that, you know, you've taken a few bucks. What's the next step? Go read those reviews. You'll see some of those guys are saying, this is what it took to push me over the edge. And they'll mention, you know, a few things that they were doing or different or whatever. And that was just so refreshing to me to see that, because I'm like, yep, that's why I titled the book that way. How to Take the Best Buck of Your Life. Yeah. We can get mule deer bucks. Yeah. We can fill the freezer. I'm all for that. But if you want to go 4 years old or older on purpose, and you want to kill more than three in your life, you're going to have to be doing some things on purpose. So it's so refreshing to read that when I get that feedback from guys that, yep, this took me over the finish line, you know, where before I was just kind of hanging back with the pack. And so I hopefully I've answered that, but that's how I think about it.
No, that's awesome. I will definitely be linking to your book and all the books you suggested on the show notes page. That'll be thewildinitiative.com/239 for episode 239. You know, Robbie, I really appreciate you taking the time to hop on the podcast with me. I'm glad we were able to sync this up. If folks wanted to find you, and actually I want to give you a chance to give a little promo for Rock Slide, for your scouting service. We've already talked about the book. I mean, I'll kick it off with a little promo for Rock Slide. You know, when I first, you know, I'm kind of the adult onset hunter. When I first got into hunting, that was one of the first resources that was recommended to me was Rock Slide, for the articles, for the message board, for the classifieds, especially. It was a great place. I think half of the gear I still use. I originally got secondhand from Rock Slide, on the Rock Slide forums. And to this day, I still claim my self-proclaimed title is having left the best review of any of your products on the website. I've determined.
All right.
It was for the okayest hunter shirt. And
okay.
I just left the longest, most ridiculous out there review of my life. And I think somebody from your team ended up reaching out to me on social and saying, we have to send you a hat for that.
Yes, definitely do. So when you say you put it on there, did you put it in a forum thread, or was it in the feedback on the store?
No, it's like the actual product review on the t-shirt in the store. It's like
in the store. Okay. So, Tanya runs the store. So a lot of times I don't see that. As soon as we hang up, dude, I'm going to go look at that, because I've seen those reviews in there and I want to check that out. But man, we appreciate that. And I appreciate the Rock Slide plug. For people that don't know what Rock Slide is, it's spelled ROK slide, rockslide.com. Started by basically David Long Aaron Snyder and Ryan Avery. David Long and Aaron Snyder have moved on to other things now. And Ryan Avery is my co-owner. And I was actually just one of the writers on there, and I've kind of moved up the ladder. And now I co-own the site. So it's a large forum, public forum, all about hunting, all things hunting. And it also has an online magazine portion of it too. That's our homepage. And if you go to rockslide.com, that's where you're going to land. That's where all our articles are posted. That's where my blog is. We have contributing writers from members that send us articles. I just published a member article last week and one 2 weeks ago on bear hunting. We have a staff of writers that also produce content that are on our staff. Tony Treach is one of them. I mentioned him earlier in the podcast. So producing content for the magazine, but the forum is really where all the traffic is. Like, that's what you mentioned right there. That's where you've learned a lot about gear. It's got a gear bent to it. That's a lot of things that we're talking about, but you know, all things hunting. And we try to run a clean forum. You know, we try to make sure there's not a bunch of trolls on there, do our best on that. But we have a lot of great members that help us out with that too. So it's got a pretty good feel for it as well. And Sam, do you remember your screen name?
It was back. So I rebranded the podcast a few years ago, but I used to, I think I may still be Living Country in the City on the Rock Slide forums somewhere in there.
Yeah. For those of you that don't join a forum, dude, we all have code names, you know? So, you know, it might be, you know, Stalker Joe at 599, you know, just funny stuff. So that's why I always ask what people's screen names are, so I know who they are. And, you know, because I'm an owner on the site, I'm easy to find. Mine's Robbie Denning. And, but Sam, make sure you say hi when you're on there. And, you know, people have to be a sponsor to be able to post their podcast on there, but dude, we'll happily post this one on there for you. So make sure you let me know when it's ready, and let's get you a post up, guys, and go on there, listen to this podcast, subscribe to your podcast, and you know, that's a great way to connect with people. But dude, according to Google, there's 3 or 4 million people that come to Rock Slide a year, so it's a huge crowd. It's a big slice of the North American hunting community, and even beyond North America. I mean, we got a lot of UK guys, Australia, you know, all the English speaking hunting countries are on there as well and everything. So it's a great place to be. And I appreciate you letting me talk about it. You know, it's how I make basically half my income, and and I love it. We just turned 10 years old in February, and it's been a blessing. I mean, I'm just really thankful to be part of it.
Yeah, no, I can't say enough about it. I found it to be an incredible resource. And, you know, like I said, I still use quite a bit of gear that I got from someone on Rock Slide, whether it was new or secondhand, or I've got packs and optics and tripods. And I think I got my teepee tent that I still use, off of Rock Slide, my stove, I think short of my camo and my boots, there's probably a little bit of everything I've gotten off of Rock Slide.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, because, you know, we have our classified section. I think we have three. I think we have just general gear, and we have an optics classified section, and I think there's a firearms one. I don't run that portion of the site, so I'm a little rusty on it. That's what Ryan does. And dude, our classifieds is just going crazy. It's one of our biggest sub forums. Mm-hmm. But it's because you can save so much money on there, and you just laid it out. I mean, you bought entire system for hunting, a Western hunting system. Dude, I'll bet you saved thousands of dollars going that route. At least $1,000.
Easily. I mean, I'd saved at least $400 to $500 on the tent I purchased.
There you go. And that's what I mean. And dude, so, and a lot of this gear that's on there, I mean, it's lightly used. You know, guys buy it. Oh, it's not the tent I wanted, whatever. And because it's a pretty tight community, you know, you can't just get on there and bull crap people. You know, some of them will call you out. Now, because we brought it up, I do want to let people know, if you do use the classifieds, you can get ripped off. And we have rules on there. You have to have at least 10 posts to be on there. You have to be part of the community. You know, we're watching it all the time. So you can't just get on there right now and buy some boots. You know, you gotta prove that you're part of the community and everything. But that's just to protect people. And it's reduced the spam, and it's reduced the ripoffs. But also with PayPal and Venmo, they have different levels that you can pay. Don't go the cheap route. Go the route where you pay a little bit more, but your purchase is insured,
protected,
however they call that. I don't use those systems, so I don't know. But dude, the vast majority of people we see get ripped on off on those go with the cheaper option. I think on PayPal, it's called Friends and Family, I think.
And
people try to use that. You know, they, oh, man, I saved $15. Yeah, dude, and you just lost 400, you know, because that was actually a guy in a, I can't remember where all our ripoffs are going, Russia or something like that, probably, knowing those guys. So you know, protect yourself when you're on there, but it is a great way to buy and sell gear. It really is.
All right, so if folks wanted to follow along with you, where can they find you online?
rockslide.com on the forums. You'll see me on there. Probably the easiest way. I'm on Instagram. I try to post on there. I'm not a heavy Instagram poster, but you can see me on there. I still have the ancient old Facebook. everything's under Robbie Denning, R-O-B-B-Y Denning. And I'm on there, but we'd love to see people over on Rockslide too.
Awesome. Well, again, I'll make sure to link to all of that on the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com. Robbie, thank you so much for taking the time to hop on with me today.
Dude, you're welcome. It was great.
All right, y'all. That'll do it for this episode of The Wild Initiative. Make sure to check out the show notes page at thewildinitiative.com to get links to everything we talked about in today's episode. There's a ton to check out. We'll have links to all of those books where you can find them on Amazon or other websites. Also a link to Robbie's book, to Rockslide, all of those great websites. A big thank you to Robbie again for hopping on. I appreciate him taking time out, and there's some really great mule deer information in there. So y'all, that'll do it for this week. Looking forward to next time. But until then, I hope this episode inspired you to get involved, get outdoors, and plan your initiative for the wild.
Thank you for listening to The Wild Initiative. Please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher, and head on over to thewildinitiative.com to get show notes, check out the blog, gear discounts, other podcasts from the Wild Initiative family, and more.
One of the most legendary shows in the outdoors is on Waypoint TV. Don't miss Primo's Truth About Hunting, Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.